and come into his court.
The gospel reading, and by the way, Frank told me I didn't have to use the lectionary. He was surprised that a Baptist would even know what that is. Not only did I know, and I often use it, but since I'm preaching once every two or three months, I'm just going to kind of do what I want. And so if Frank gets all ruffled, tell him I'm really sorry, okay? Actually, he knew that I probably wasn't going to do it. What he didn't know was I was going to take the passage right after that, which could very well be the lectionary text for next week, so you might get a double whammy of that. But anyway, it's found in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 7, beginning with verse 11. Soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her and said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the coffin, and those carrying it stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. They were all filled with awe and praised God. "A great prophet has appeared among us," they said. "God has come to help his people." This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country. I am really glad to be here. To be perfectly candid, I'm surprised that Frank Beck doesn't have any more friends than that he had to ask me. I don't know why he did. I'm glad he did. My calendar is very open, especially in Baptist life. I don't seem to be as popular there as I had hoped 40 years ago, but nevertheless, I'm glad that he asked me. I regret that he does not have more friends. I hope that he doesn't lose any today because I'm here. Somebody asked me if I was going to preach more like a Presbyterian or a Baptist, and I don't know. I do know this, that had I known Joe Art and Walter McKellar was going to be here, I would have a different text and sermon. In fact, I'm thinking about having an intermission and all of y'all leaving except McKellar and Art for the intermission, and then I'll come back and finish the rest. But, and then, you know, you Presbyterians never have got that altar call thing down, and so I'll have one for them, and so maybe you can get a couple of Presbyterians. I spent a lot of time in New Orleans. That was where I went to school or graduate school for 6 years. And there is nothing quite like a New Orleans jazz funeral. There are many, many brass bands, but the most significant one in New Orleans when I was there, and probably still is the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. And the brand, we'll say the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, begins a very solemn procession right outside the church doors. And the band will play such somber music, and they will play it so slowly, "Just a Closer Walk with Thee," "The Old Rugged Cross," and "Amazing Grace." There's no improvisation, no frills in the music. It's just solemn as they march towards the cemetery, slowly, very, very slowly. And as they do, there is just this sadness oozing with each mournful sound, and the horns communicating the blues and the grief, which is a natural part of the human experience. Once the procession arrives at the cemetery, the band quits playing until the last words are spoken and the body is lowered into the ground. Actually, it's not lowered into the ground in New Orleans, as you know. It's placed above the ground. And the band will move a respectful distance from the grave, and the mood shifts. It just changes. All of a sudden, they open up these brightly colored umbrellas, filling your eyes with color. The snare drummer, who was so solemn, almost to the point of not using his drum in the procession to the cemetery, takes the mute button off, and he opens up. And they lead the funeral procession back into town. And as they do, there is no more solemn, but there's a little bit of a dance in their step. And I couldn't do it even with a good knee, but maybe you've seen it before. They can really move. And the folks are led back to their church or wherever the funeral had taken place. And people who live alongside the processional route would all come out because they had heard the mournful sounds of death, and they knew that just a little bit later they could anticipate something quite different, and boy did they ever. For now the band was playing "I'll Fly Away," John the Revelator, and one of the best of them is "Didn't He Ramble." And they would play it in such a way that everyone knew that the wait was over and celebration was there. Luke's the only one that tells the story. Nain was a small village 25 miles from Capernaum, 6 miles southeast of Nazareth, and it's not really of any significance. It's mentioned nowhere else in the New Testament or the Bible. But it did, like every other city, have the same status for widows, which was very precarious in the ancient world. They were dependent upon their families and whatever form of community charity that they might could get. The fact that the young man that died was not only her only son, but she had already lost her husband, just compounded the tragedy. When the procession left the town or the home of the lady in Nain, her son's body being transported through the streets into the community, out of past the walls of the city to the cemetery, she was not planning on a celebration. She was not like the people along the streets in New Orleans waiting for the return of the processional. There would be no return. In fact, she recognized that her last male relative was dead, which meant that there was no hope for her. She had no expectations. She had no more dreams about life. Life was essentially over for her, other than whatever some good people might do to help her along. The people in the procession, along with those along the street, heard the anguished cries of despair and recognized that this was even more than just losing life, that there were people who were losing hope. But this lady's grief was compounded by the fact that she was now alone, and being alone as a woman in that day was the death sentence. There would be no celebration, only the mournful dirge that would be this woman's song for the rest of her life. And she probably wanted to die too. When they were leaving the city, and the disciples, Jesus and the disciples, met the processional, Luke says, and only the way Luke can, when the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her. And he said, "Don't cry." Have you ever wanted to tell Jesus what to do? I have. I've been to too many funeral homes and heard too many people say things that I just couldn't believe they said. God needed another angel. Oh, we can do better, can't we? God called and he answered. Well, if he'd have known he was going to die, he sure wouldn't have answered. I don't think. Don't cry. This is what God wanted. I can't think of anything worse than telling a person who has just lost a loved one, don't cry. You just don't tell them that because it is part of what we do. And the more you love somebody, the more you cry. The more you desire them back, the more anguish and heartache there is. And so that's the last thing you would tell a grieving mother, not to cry. Unless, of course, you can change things. Unless you can do something about their situation. Jesus could tell this lady not to cry because he was invested in the impending celebration. He moves to the coffin, touches it. When he touches that coffin, he being a Jew, and you didn't do things like that, the processional stopped on a dime. And Luke says that Jesus said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." In truth, that's when I would have said, "This is too much. I can't take it." First, he tells her not to cry. Now he's touched the coffin. Now he's asked the dead guy to get up. And when he says this, Luke says that the young man got up. I've talked to dead people before. I talk to my father all the time. And you'll be glad to know he doesn't talk back. But he does to me sometimes. I've talked to dead people. I'm sure that you've talked to dead people. But when I'm done, I leave and they stay right where I was talking to them. I remember when Joni's father died, one of my children swore that he saw him moving in the coffin. When my dad died, the same one said, "Dad, just in case, let me put this..." And he put a royal flush in my dad's casket, just in case. He had some weird ideas about death. But this was nothing more than the hope of a child wanting his grandfather back. I wonder what this mother had said to her dead son. "I'm going to miss you. How could you do this? You're not supposed to die. I'm supposed to be the one that you bury, not the other way around, etc." Whatever she had said, whatever you said, and whatever I say, well, none of us expect anybody to get up. It's not something that we had ever seen before, but Luke says the dead man sat up and began to talk. Something we've not witnessed, nor do we expect to, and if you tell me you have, I won't believe you. But here in the Gospel of Luke, we find this story. There was no celebration planned, but I can bet you that the jaws dropped, the umbrellas were raised, and the streets were filled with singing. Not the funeral dirge offered earlier, but songs of praise, and there was a dance in the steps of those in the processional. And I love this phrase. I don't really know what to do with it, but you do with it what you will. Luke says, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. That is one of the warmest, most beautiful phrases in all of the New Testament. I cannot imagine what that mother must have felt. I cannot in any way understand that. But she must have recognized immediately what a gift, because it was so much more. The natural order of things was that the woman was to give birth to a son who would care for her in old age. She would die and he would take care of her and so forth. The natural order of things has never been that we bury our children. It's always been the other way around. No celebration planned, but I bet one occurred. Luke says they were all filled with awe and praised God. They were overcome with reverent awe that acknowledged they were in the presence of God. Usually when they felt they were in the presence of God in those days, they would say, he's got to be a prophet. So they said, a great prophet has appeared among us. God has come to help his people. This was Luke's way of saying there is something mighty that has happened here. What is this story about? It's not a story about faith. Jesus heals a lot of people in the Gospel of Luke. A woman approaches him in a crowd. She touches the hem of his garment because she has enough faith to believe that if only she can touch him. A centurion, supposed to preach on that today, sends word through his friends that his servant is ill, and Jesus said that the man believed and so his servant was healed. Jesus often said that you, because of your faith, has been healed, but there's no faith in this story. The woman does not ask Jesus to raise her son from the dead. I'm sure she would have had she thought it would help, but she didn't. She didn't fall on her knees and beg Jesus to help. All she does is cry. It is all most any of us would have done at that point. Maybe she didn't ask because she thought it was too late. Luke gives absolutely no evidence of faith on her part or on the part of her son. Is it a story about gratitude? We don't even see where she said thank you. I'm sure she did, but Luke didn't tell us. Did she go hug Jesus' neck and tell him how she was lacking in words to thank him, but he must know how much she cared? Maybe she did, but we don't see that. When the son did give a word of thanks, did he say anything to Jesus? I don't know. It's not a story about faith. It's not a story about gratitude. I'll tell you what it's a story about. It's a story about grace. Undiluted, unearned, unasked for grace. The celebration of the dead man rising did not happen because of faith or because someone asked for it. It did occur. Or it didn't occur because the son was worthy of another moment of breath. It happened only because Jesus had compassion on the lady and on God's grace, and through his grace changed the sounds of grief to become sounds of praise. The point of the whole story is about the compassion of Jesus. The point is that when the grace of God comes into your life, and I know and believe with all my heart that it does, it requires nothing of you but acceptance. You can receive it or not. You can sing with your teeth clenched, or you can sing with your hearts open. You can mute the drum, or you can let loose and know that the angels are dancing right along with you. You can keep your umbrellas closed, or you can open them up, giving a burst of color and joy to everybody you come in contact with. You can keep the grave clothes on and a tight grip around us so that we don't do anything wrong, or you can allow for the grave clothes to be removed and the grace to flood your soul so that you are free to be who you are. Every day. Every day. It is only within the kingdom of God that we grieve and celebrate when those we care about die. I know that all of us will march to the heart-wrenching funeral dirge on our way to the ceremony, because that's what we do. That is the way we respect those that we have loved. That is the way we grieve. But because of grace, we can unpack our party clothes and know that celebration time is just right around the corner. Amen.
Please stand as we bow our face together.